So welcome to episode 3 of Arcoth's A Marriage of Serpents, a simple communion story. Last episode, episode 2, titled The Spiral, saw our heroes converging together at an old structure outside of town called the Proving Grounds, locally called the Proving Grounds, which is built a little bit like a sort of a Celtic Colosseum. And so therefore, instead of out and up, as the Roman Colosseum is, it's in and down, as a sort of reverse ring fort, which are common across the lands of Maurer. At the ring fort, they were greeted by a figure, by apparently of legend. The sun, as it does, fell below the lead curtain of the sky in its passage into the dark. And a figure stepped through one of the large doorways in the Proving Grounds and gathered the light apparently around him, wearing a brilliant white cloak and speaking in a booming theatrical voice of ancient portent. And he greeted them and welcomed them and offered them that his hope was that they found the Proving Grounds to be the shelter they needed, not the shelter they wanted. Approaching him closely and working their separate magics, they learned that all, as is often the case, was not as it seems, and that this was not some lost god or some avatar of Bel, but a mortal being and possibly a trick of the light. And in a quick conflagration between the powers of the dragon and the serpent, it was revealed that this place once had a great dome covering it, and that it was possible that the man, the entertainer, one might say the clown, who called himself Charnatarga, meaning Lord Touched, was in fact one of the touched, those who perhaps have had an encounter with the divine and came away broken. And he ended up welcoming them and bringing them into the confines of the Proving Ground. He told them that it had been closed just before a show several weeks ago, and that the spinners from the Tainwood that had been captured for that evening's entertainment and three of the performing heroes had at some point during that day vanished. On further examination, a few things became clear. One is that the powers of Cecil, Sisyphus, and Kian are at odds with one another. And it seemed to have so unsettled Kian that his powers went out of his control, and perhaps the spirit of the serpent emerged as he drew on the wisdom of the water in the cisterns below the Proving Grounds, and a voice of divinity or some other powerful being spoke, proclaiming that the water that was bound here did not belong. And upon that, all of the water leached up out of the ground and out of the cisterns and rained upward, the only one safe from it being Claiborne, who sheltered on the blue granite edges of the proving grounds. No harm seemed to come to Kian or others as a result of this flash of magic, but certainly Cecil Sisyphus and, or Cecile Sisyphus and Kian knew that if something like this happened in the middle of Kerkuval, all would not be well. They met an older pantry caretaker who was perhaps affectionately called Rat. And he confirmed, in fact, that there had been spinners. They had been brought in by, they'd been captured from the Tainwood far to the north at the borders of, at the borders of Tuhal, by the hero, by the hero Bin Odair, and brought there for combat and other games. In his old crotchety pantry way, also offered little of unsolicited advice or help. Terriga continued to be present, but not especially useful. And the group continued their investigations. Claiborne engaged in a construction project outside, creating a sort of ladder made of crushed limestone from the greensward that surrounds the central pit of the Proving Grounds up across the blue granite that bounds it. In presumably response to Terriga's story about the most active ghosts of the Proving Ground, which are a mother who cannot leave the granite and a child that cries for her who cannot leave the limestone. Mm-hmm. Down below, Cecile and Sisyphus, and Kian found two cells as they were led there by Rat. Where spinners had been kept, although there was evidence in one of them that something that was not a spinner had lived and eaten there. Because as Claiborne astutely pointed out, spiders do not eat the meat of their prey, but rather spin them and hang them and suck out their fermented juices. Subsequently, Cecile found one of the kind of charnel disposal pits in the underground circle of caverns or of tunnels beneath the Proving Grounds, and having smelled decaying human flesh, went down on his own without Sisyphus, who was much too large to go down into the underground, and having seen something flashing and silver and bright, was determined to snatch it, and did, but suffered severe toxic burns as a result of touching the things in the dripping mess down below in the charnel pit, but returned with a bracelet that was clean and clear and pure silver, and was identified as belonging to the hero Bin Odair. After this, Kian went above ground, washing himself again, even though he was clean from the rain that fell upward and did not fall again. breaking the natural order. What kind of wizard would ever get in trouble for that? And he withdrew a deck of small waxed paper plaques and played a game with Claiborne, who it became clear early on could not in fact perceive or was not perceiving the wizard sigils inscribed on the plaques. But nonetheless, the game told a strange and convoluted story that did not seem to please the wizard and did not perhaps reveal what he had hoped it would reveal. And then the four of them gathered back together and shared their stories with one another. Did I miss anything in my recap?
Nope. I added a bunch of that to the notes.
Thank you. Oh, how fun.
Awesome.
Alrighty. And so we begin our adventure today. Adventure 3 of The Marriage of Serpents, which is titled by this card, which is The Child. That shows many moons overlaying a young person, decorated as if for some special occasion.
Paul, I have a question for you about the last session.
Yeah.
So I was just recalling as I was going through the notes that I asked three questions through the serpent of the man who later turned out to be Taraga, but probably wasn't. And I remember that the two answers were serves to Hall and his intent is not his own. The first question was whether or not he was a supernatural being, and I forget if it was affirmative or not.
No, he's not. He's okay. Mortal.
Great, thank you.
The mist upon his flesh confirmed that whatever impersonal force has taken Thurn's place hungers and already has begun to feast upon his flesh.
Are you talking about Bin?
No, Taraga.
Oh.
As he is no longer a child, death feasts already upon him.
Oh, I see.
Any other questions? How is this lighting?
Appropriately ominous.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. I put a lamp above my workstation and it in the hopes that, and the successful result being that it would illuminate both me and all of my notes and resources and things, so I could actually read them. Imagine that.
Helpful.
Yay.
So helpful. What could happen next? Alrighty. As often happens in this season, the lead sky of the day gives way, and as the new day begins at nightfall, the clouds scatter and the stars come out. The stars that sometimes are called the Watchers or the Preservers, and that the Wolfen lay claim to and tell stories that all of their ancestors and the great heroes of their people make and are made of the lights that gather in, particularly in a streak, a thick streak of stars that bisect the heavens called the Path. And so the stars come out and and as the clouds gave way, the moon Gromgud, or Gromergud, which is shines a dull blue silver, stands overhead. And all of them would know, or perhaps have the sense, that although Gromgud's silver light is dim, it is said that in its light, many things that have been lost can be found. And similarly, on the far horizon already, not having seen transit the sky, which it must have done behind the clouds, there is dark red Dolan hanging above the horizon, a sort of red-black circle, limned in a promise of red luminescence, almost like blood glimpsed during the day. And it is said that Dolan is female, how you tell what sex a moon is, we'll leave to the viewers. But that she is a keeper of the doors of night and a protector of wanderers. And so Dolan and Gromgood at least seem to have captured the beginning of this day. And as in all right thinking places, day begins at sunset with the sun, with the cruel sun having fled the sky. And so gathered in the clean, chill air of a new day, as darkness gathers across the world and turns it blue with faint red tinges around the shadows of things from far Dolan. The heroes have traded what stories they may, and are standing, attended by Chorna Terga, who has donned a somewhat floppy crown made of yellow yarn and bedecked with fallen bits of bronze, some of which look a little bloody, like they may have been teeth or perhaps extracted from the flesh of fallen warriors. Bedecked in his crown, and he is he's juggling a set of rounded granite river stones for your edification. And standing nearby, looking completely over Targa, is the aged gray pantry rat with his gray eyes gone kind of in kind of frighteningly green and internal luminescent in the dark. He's lit a few torches in sconces that are stones that turn cunningly and are filled with oil. And so he's lit a few sconces. And so there's a firelight sort of creeping in at the edges of things in the proving grounds. And the pantry has brought forth a stew and a few loaves of very thick brown bread seasoned with cream. And set them on a stone. Should you be hungry?
My goodness.
That was kind.
I'm certain, heroes, he says, using that word for the first time to address you, that Cleon Rua, which you know is a Phoenician name meaning red clay, will be sad knowing that he has missed your appearance.
And what's his relationship to this place?
He's the fight monger. And he presumably is off finding other people to spill their blood for the amusement of a crowd.
How often does he go personally?
Go personally?
To find more victims for the arena.
Well, he's the fightmonger, and I would say, as would others, that the Proving Grounds have no victims. Only participants. I'm sure the spinners would agree.
Are all the participants in the Proving Grounds, this is out of character, if I know, are they Are they almost always willing, or is there ever fights where it's unwilling?
Oh, there's lots of fights against slaves or captured spies or, people who failed at a cattle raid against Tuhal or, oh yeah.
Is it like Rome where you could earn your freedom?
Yeah. And so, yeah, given a shitty shield, no armor, a dented helmet, and a sword that may or may not have an edge, if you defeat one of the well-trained, well-armored, well-armed, well-slept warriors that's sent against you, and there's often more than one, then sure, yeah, you can win your freedom.
Well, this hospitality is very impressive, Brad. Thank you.
It is always Cleon Roa's intent to honor those that come to the Proving Grounds. And he has given me, and he tangs his lead torque with one yellowed fingernail, the latitude to see that the right thing is done.
Can I, I'm curious, I want to do an investigation, and I want to, this is a moment in time, but I want to, my sense is somebody who reads people as part of his living, like, does Rat seem, is there an undercurrent of resentment or well, obviously, but like,
yes, you do not need to perform an investigation.
Right. But
he wears it as clearly as he wears his bitten off right ear.
Sure. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that, is there an undercurrent of like deception? Like, is he?
He is being intentionally smirkingly facetious, but also,
trying to avoid saying anything he can't walk back.
Yeah, but also, yeah. But all the while, providing not only the shape of hospitality, but the heart of it. He's answered your questions. He's provided you with food.
Yes.
And he showed you around.
Right. And that was why I was asking the question, is I was wondering, is the facetiousness kind of an act to obscure something? Or is that pretty genuine? Is that just genuinely kind of... Is he being as transparent, mm-hmm. or is he doing something to mask that?
Yeah, so I think you'll need to have, you know, more conversation with him.
Okay.
To suss that out and sort of ask him questions and use your own, you know, and so we can assume that as people eat, and unfortunately, Cecile, you couldn't stomach the bread. But Sisyphus can't, and neither of you could eat the stew.
Okay,
there's dead things in it.
Yeah.
I think as we sit for dinner, I kind of ask gently questions about Rat's life, how he ended up. By the way, is it a he or she? I thought it was a she.
No, Rat's male.
Yeah, how he ended up here, and you know,
he accurately reiterates what he told you before, with an air of like sarcastic subservience. The like, oh, of course, I know I know that my words hardly matter, and why would you retain facts about one as poor as I? But as I said earlier, I was taken when I was young from the Tainwood by a great hero of Tuhal.
Ah. Whatever became of that hero?
He seems to have fallen from the world. In the war, the wars took him. A great loss for the kingdom.
And so you're
doing your personal investigation with him. So, what are you tapping for that?
I was gonna say, Kian, in response to that, raises a glass. Did he offer us wine or just water or what?
He didn't bring anything to drink. It's okay. Kind of a light broth to go with the soup. So that would be kind of drink. If you ask, do you ask for something to drink?
That's fine. I think I have my own skin of water, and I will kind of lift it and say, "What a shame." Yeah. So to do the investigation. Oh, where's my character? I had it right here. Hold on. I'd like to use perceptive, likable, and secrets.
Just a second.
And tell me about secrets. What pillar is that from?
That's from my mission to go home. And I believe the question that answered in the book was like, what is the big currency that you have? What do you have that's most useful for you to go home? I think that was the case. I should have written that down, but.
That one doesn't quite feel right to me.
Okay.
For this.
All right. How about the serpent is patient? And if not, then I'll just take the two.
So you're going to weave magic into it?
No. Then I'll just do the two.
Okay. So slash roll 2d6 plus 2. I'm saying that half for Matthew's benefit.
Slash. Where were we rolling? Was it in general?
Yeah. Yeah, it could be.
2d6 plus 2.
Thanks for posting those notes, by the way. I appreciate that.
Oh, ooh.
You're playing one key in with another key in.
Eleven.
All right. So an excellent success. So you have two power involved. So what are your two questions? And they'd be social, kind of trade crafty kind of a questions from the origin of your tags. Yeah.
So the first question is what I was asking earlier is there an undercurrent? Is there a layer? Is there a layer of kind of deception? Is he masking something, or is he just basically being very open and honest about how he feels, albeit, you know, indirectly?
It's clear to you that he is using the reputation of Pantry to appear somewhat recalcitrant, while being deeply faithful to the Proving Grounds.
Huh.
Hmm.
Very interesting. And now the second question is, what is his actual disposition towards us? What does he think of us in the time that we've been here? And our mission.
Uh-huh. It's transitioned from, how do I get rid of whoever the fuck this is, to actually wanting to help you, which is why he provided the meal.
Lovely.
So that he would have an excuse for you to ask him questions.
Wow. That was great. Thank you.
It appears that not only the Wolfen are faithful.
I think Keen asks him about his own like personal history at the Proving Grounds, just in terms of getting, trying to get an idea of like, not, I'm not sure what questions he would ask, but trying to figure out why is he faithful to this place that he was brought. Actually, he might just ask that outright. I think he says, you know, you were brought here.
You would know that you're not going to get the real answer if you just ask him.
Ah, all right. That's fair.
You're going to get an answer prepared to entertain. Prepared to entertain and distract.
Fair enough.
In some ways, he seems to be a much more apt entertainer than Charna Targa.
Naturally. I think
Dale looks worried.
Uh-oh. No, I'm trying to find ways into the scene rather than just lie here like a lump.
I think I look over at Claiborne. Do you remember the pound tree?
This being is new to me.
This particular being, or beings even like this one?
I know I, for one, have met a number of pantry, and Sisyphus has known far more.
Indeed.
Paul, when we were talking about the making of Claiborne, mm-hmm. am I remembering that one of the children was a pantry?
I don't
or
think
were
so.
Were they all human?
No, I think they were all human.
Okay.
I think that's what you said. If you want to change it, it's fine. Because you said they all looked identical to him.
Something else I'm thinking of. I have seen his kind at a distance, but never spoken.
I have seen your kind never before, and I am amazed that you speak. But I suppose that could equally be said of me.
I found that the least surprising thing about you, Keen says with a small smile. I miss my home. Do you ever have thoughts of the Tainwood?
I remember the roots, dark and green and deep, but I was quite young. If it is a world lost, it is a world also forgotten.
Seems a great many places, an increasing number, fit that description after the war. I do hope I will see my home again.
You have adopted the common accent. You have been here for some time.
Yes.
Surely with all the secrets at your command, you could have escaped by now.
Escaping isn't a problem. Surviving is. I assume the same is true of you.
There, is a word in the common tongue for a pantry seen by himself. It is target.
So you understand?
Perhaps. What do you make of the bracelet that you retrieved at great cost, young Surin? I would ask your elder in the way of the other races, but it is known to me that he is less responsive.
Have you found something?
He will speak to you if you wish. You just have to be patient, waiting for the answer.
I have waited my whole life for the world to change. Will you sell the bracelet in the new market or the old?
Not until we know what it is.
I think this is actually the first I've heard or seen of it since I was up top. What bracelet did you find?
I think I told you about it in the story, but I think I kind of bring it over and show it to you. You also notice some of the burns.
It's a thick silver, probably it looks like at first glance, like it might be pewter. But you think it's actually been sort of finely beaten and impressed with little bits of iron to darken the background so that the silver figures that run around the bracelet gleam more prominently. And so you think it's actually pure silver?
As I kind of hold it, I think my hand brushes over a part of residue from the acidic burn of earlier, and I kind of wince a little bit and rub my fingers. Where was this? What happened?
In the charnel pit.
Do they use acid down there? Is that why? The lye. Is it lye? Or? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lye and water will hide many secrets.
Probably was no accident that the owner was there. I assume this was held.
It actually was like probably on the wrist, which is why you got burned. Because
does the pantry recognize it? Does Rhett recognize it?
He clearly knows what it is.
Can you tell us the story of this? It seems strange that a valuable piece would be thrown into the trash and disposed of.
That is Bin O'Dare's clan bracelet. It's too small now to be removed over his hand without breaking his thumb. Do you know what that means, young Surin?
I do not. We are new.
It means that you have uncovered a murder. Bin O'Dare did not go missing. Someone murdered him and shoved him down the charnel pit.
Well, you know the most likely people to have spent time here.
I do indeed.
Did he have enemies?
He was remarkable, but irritating. I would say that the one that disliked him the most was Deru O'Boyn.
That name is unfamiliar to me.
He's a freed combatant. He lives at the edge of the old market region.
I think I heard of the Boynes. They're not from around here, correct?
That is correct.
Don't they hail from Malay?
Yes. He was captured and forced to fight for his freedom, which he won, and then continued to fight because he had a taste for it. This is not uncommon in the clan Boyn.
Why did he dislike Ben?
The O'Dares are a great family from the lands to the north in Tuhal. And Bin was a hero of his people. And he chose to spend that currency to win fame here in the Proving Grounds. It was something I think Deru does not understand.
He's deeply overstepping his bounds by addressing a freed man and a combatant by his personal name rather than his family name, having given it to you.
Do not comment on that. Are there many regular combatants?
There are not. There are some who return with the cattle drives or the harvest or other reasons and that take up that time in the Proving Grounds to keep themselves sharp or perhaps to win extra coin for their families. There are many of these. Of those that we see every day, there are few. Deru is one who refused to fight anything that Bin brought to the Proving Grounds. And so on that day, he was not scheduled to appear. Of the other regular combatants, they were both of the clan of Lu, who would also be ill-favored by Deru O'Boyn, given the ancient rivalry between these two clans of Alay. But both Donald and Brandon O'Lu were here that day, but were not here as the day ended and the darkness of the new day began and the fights were set to commence.
Did I hear correctly that all four of the most consistent combatants were from Malay?
No.
Three.
Bin O'Dare is from here, from this kingdom, to the north.
But the three surviving ones are all from Malay.
The O'Dares are a prominent family near Caer Braith, which shelters us from the pantry threat. Do you eat, Claiborne? Do you hunger?
restroom. I'll be right back.
I do not in the way that you mean.
Because it is rude, even with Bahan's death written on the gravestones of the kingdom, to refuse an offer of hospitality. And others, humans, perhaps, with their thin pink skins, might take offense to this in the future. I say this because Kian has gone to relieve himself so as not to offend him.
Are the people of Alay the only ones that come to this arena?
No.
Or to others from other far lands?
Once, even the High King saw fit to send his heroes here to the burning grounds of Kaer Kival. Many nobles would come with their heroes in tow to prove their worth on this grass. But now the world is smaller.
It's a long way to send people just to have them kill others. Not for land or for food, but just for glory.
Ah, I see. You are beginning to understand.
I think I know how to answer that question.
Yes.
The ground that I am sitting on maintains me, and so I am partaking in the hospitality of this place.
Ah, yes, I saw the thing you did.
Did you understand the thing that I did?
He smiles with one golden feline fang and doesn't say anything. Was it for the ghosts? Says Targa.
I do not understand ghosts, but if
I don't think the anyone story does. Is
true, then yes. It was to help them. And perhaps, by extension, help this place.
Matthew?
Mm-hmm.
You did tell Kian about the story about how you found Bin underneath, right?
Yeah.
Would you have mentioned that Targa said mentioned the story about the silver bracelet?
Which one? I think I would have.
Okay. Then I think Kian asks, Cecile mentioned that you said Bidden had an ugly story about the bracelet. I'm speaking to Targa. Do you remember it?
I do indeed.
Would you share it?
I have been reminded, and he glances sideways at Rat, on numerous occasions that I am not a bard.
Storytelling is a gift that Mahan has given all of us, even if she no longer is with us now. I say, with no sympathy for Mahan.
Well, he looks at Rat, who makes like a down gesture. Oh, right. Shall I not do the voice then? Rat shakes his head. Oh, well, then. Bin O'Dare was the youngest of brothers, and when the God's Fall Wars began to spread, and it was clear that this was not a war of conquering, but a war for our survival, the call went out to all the clans to send all the men they could. But in the O'Dare clan, as in many greater clans, there was an older age at which their men were banded. And Bin, being unhappy to be left behind by his elder brothers, stole a pair of clippers from the monger of their clan and clipped his elderly father's bracelet, taking it for himself and presenting it to the Lord Braith when the men were gathered, separate from his brothers. He had very little to say about the wars themselves, except that after his brothers passed, his family assumed all their children were gone. And he did something in the war for which one of the bright people made his bracelet anew on his wrist. And so it said that there's a blessing of the bright folk on the bracelet. And returning home and seeing this falsehood, even though he was the last of their sons, his parents spurned him and cast him out from Clan O'Dare. And it is using their name, as he said it, that he did in his work to spite them. That's a dark story, isn't it? He says to Rat. Rat nods. The very definition. Look. It made Dale pull his blanket up.
As soon as the word Bright Ones is mentioned, Kian, not too gently, gives the bracelet back to Cecile.
So Paul, remind me, who are the Bright Ones again?
The Bright Ones are the Fae, the beautiful ones.
Oh, so there are Fae. I didn't realize that those were contemporary. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not good.
I'm not sure I understood. The older aged men were banded, and how did Bin stealing his father's bracelet allow him to go to war?
Only banded men would be taken by Lord Braith on the field of battle at that time. Things were not so desperate, I suppose.
What was the significance of being banded?
Oh, well, he holds up his arms with many brass bracelets. Pink bandit makes one a man.
Oh, so this sounds like something I should know. What does this mean? It's a...
Yeah, there are some clans that they mark the passage to manhood by fixing a permanent bracelet on the man and that has like symbols of their house and stuff.
And Bin was just too young. Is that it?
Yeah, but the O'Dares have an older age apparently than most clans. So in most clans, 14, you're a man.
Right.
And apparently the O'Dares had the audacity to raise that to, we don't know what.
Okay.
That's an interesting story about Clan O'Dare.
Did you hear that, Rat? It's not only dark, it's interesting. Yes. That doesn't mean you need to tell it to me again, though.
Well, what I find interesting is that he was cast out for the deception, even though one would assume that going to serve in the war would be were they eager to serve Clan O'Dare?
Who are you talking to?
To both Targa and Rat. Because it seems like they have the same level of familiarity with the story.
They look at each other and Targa says, "It's well known that all right-thinking men of Tuhal want to serve to keep the tyranny of Farisha from our lands." I was here though.
A lot of the men who went to fight against that tyranny didn't return. You were probably fortunate.
It sounds to me as if this young man was rather a bloodthirsty one. Would you like me to clean that bracelet for you?
Sure, Claiborne. Thank you.
He just starts running it through his fingers. How does it taste, Paul?
Do you know what aspic is, Dale?
Yes.
So it tastes like human aspic and acid and calcium.
Isn't lye not an acid, but a very powerful base?
It is. It's in fact a base. Yeah.
Okay. I believe I have it within me to neutralize whatever's left of that.
Oh yeah, clay is a great neutral substance. Mm-hmm. There's probably a little bit of sizzling.
Yeah.
Water reacting with the lye.
Right. How is your hand? Does it pain you?
I mean, a little. Mostly better.
If you like, I can remove the rest of the chemical.
I don't know. I think Sisyphus. Oh, okay. Kind of gently puts his arm over.
Claiborne simply takes his hand.
You can see that imprinted on his across his fingers in an arc and across his palm. Across his palm are the kind of bubbling, burned, figures on the bracelet, and across his fingers is just the kind of clear band of the bracelet, kind of burned, and it's sort of, the flesh is sort of bubbled and blistered.
When I looked at the bracelet earlier, could I read the figures?
They're not letters. So there's like a repeating picture, which is like a little castle thing, which is probably whatever Dun the Odair call home. And then there are like figures of weapons that obviously are somehow associated with Clan Odair. The figure of a hare.
Claiborne takes your hand in a cool, moist, and strangely comforting grip, like a handshake. And Paul, I'm going to try to remove whatever traces of volatile base are still in his wounds.
Okay. So I think this is... So, yes, you can keep him from further damage with no problem. You could also try to, like, change the game by... which is a move where you try to kind of create an advantage or remove a disadvantage. So you can do that. If you don't do well with that, I may make you make a hard choice about something.
I don't think he's quite there yet, but we may go there.
Okay. So yeah, you can absolutely just like prevent any further damage from the bracelet or the chemical remaining on his hands. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem.
But
and you could soothe it a little bit for free. So it'll only be a minus one penalty for the rest of this scene then. I'll happily just give you that. Otherwise, you need to change the game if you want to.
Right. Yes. But I'm on the path to changing the game. Do I taste the possibility of healing?
You think it's going to be hard because for example, something like a poisoning by arsenic.
Yes.
You could maybe like drain the arsenic out of the blood.
Yes.
Which would then stop it from happening. But this is like a reaction that's already happened.
It's damage to the flesh. Yes.
Yeah. So you'd have to like, you'd have to do something really hard. Like you'd have to sort of bond with the flesh and do something to sort of change the process that's going on in the flesh of like dealing with the damage.
Yes.
And you're not so sure about that?
But it has given me food for thought.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm content.
Mm-hmm. Matt, you've given us three possibilities of people who might have had reason to see Bin in his current predicament. Are there any other people that you would, shall we say, be less than surprised if they were responsible?
one of the missing fighters, Donala Olu. He was not the most ambitious man. And he would often reserve his strength beyond the beginning of a fight, which could occasionally displease Bin Odair. They did not quarrel infrequently.
You said missing fighters. I remember you mentioning that earlier. Remind me what the circumstances around that are.
Here on that day for the fight with the spinners and Bin Odair, Donal Olu, and Bandon Olu. But on the end of the day, when darkness descended and the new day began and the fight was set to take place, Cleon Rua, myself, and Taraga, and other attendants and assistants were unable to locate any of those. And it seemed that other than the dirt in between the cells that you yourself witnessed, there was no evidence of their having been here or having fled. And they haven't why been found they would no?
Since
of them there has been no sign. And Cleon Rua has gone in search of them.
So if I understand correctly, Donal of Lu and Bandon Alu are the two brothers you mentioned, is that right?
I don't know if they are brothers.
Oh, both, but two from Lu, rather.
Yes.
And you're saying that Donal had reason to be displeased with Bin, but Bandon not so much?
Well, Bin had reason to be displeased with Donal, and perhaps the reverse. They would often fight. But Bandon, no. He was a teacher. He was not the most skilled combatant, but he could get the best from others. And so Klee valued him for that.
When we first arrived, one of the questions I asked is what would be necessary to get the proving grounds opened again? And that is the mission, I assume, on which I've been sent. It's rather unclear to me.
You assume?
Apparently, living to serve doesn't always mean being clearly informed as to how that is supposed to take place. Cleon Rua is looking for these fighters.
And as a lowly servant, I have no deep insight into his intent other than his absence.
He's not missing, though.
He went looking for them.
Yes.
And perhaps to secure other combatants and has not returned.
That's true. It's just been me and the Ras.
When he goes on his monster hunting expeditions.
He doesn't hunt monsters. That largely was Bin Odair. Or occasionally a patron. Or sometimes foreign dignitaries would bring monsters with them, like terrifying pantry warriors.
Which do you think is the greater concern to the proving grounds? The missing fighters or the missing spinners?
The spinners are incidental. Without a fightmonger and without fighters, there can't be a spectacle. And without a spectacle, there's no proving grounds.
Of course.
But say, perhaps.
And he turns and looks at Sisyphus.
Some great wonder of the old world were willing to stay and demonstrate powers beyond those of men. Why, I think we could open tomorrow.
Kian raises an eyebrow.
Cecile, do you or Sisyphus respond?
You're still muted, Matthew.
Sorry, could you repeat it one more time?
If perhaps an old Siren who shouldn't still be moving around were to stay and display wonders that no mortal man was capable of, why, people would certainly come to see that.
Right. yeah, I think Sisyphus kind of and then I think you get Cecile. Sisyphus has thanked you for your kind words, but will decline.
Oh, I'm sure many people would love to see a Dree murdered. I'm sorry, excuse me. Fighting.
Are you offering your services? What manner of Dree are you exactly?
Now I'm just trying to stay alive one.
That is not an unusual categorization here in Tual.
Precisely. And that is also why not terribly eager, but that might be the only resolution that will appease Cherna Agrin. Unless we were able to wrap up this mystery and find these missing fighters.
You're here on behalf of the wolf cub.
Yes.
Hmm.
When he says that, I very specifically kind of judge his expression.
He looks unhappy.
That seems to displease you.
Oh, it is not for a mere servant to be displeased at the will of a great one. I am, after all, not deathless or armed with magic.
You are, of course, a faithful and dedicated and steadfast servant.
Of course.
A far less steadfast, dedicated, and faithful servant might say something else. What do you think such a servant would actually say?
Oh, such a faithless slave would surely have been dumped into the river long ago for saying something like that. Hello, little shit.
Kian, I think, is taking a big sip of the broth and actually chokes on it a little bit, but in laughter. Well, a toast to that poor lost soul, hypothetically thrown and drowned in the river. For speaking his mind.
I'm very confused now, says Terrigan.
Rat?
But do we have something to toast with? Yes.
Can you swim?
That's a disturbing question.
he doesn't offer anything else.
Of course not.
Sisyl's like, I can swim. It's hard for Sisyphus, though. He mostly just walks on the bottom.
Paul, I didn't explicitly say this earlier, but would it be okay if I were to say that Kian, as a person of letters, carries writing material and that he copied the knotwork that we saw downstairs?
Because sure.
At the time...
Paper is pretty expensive.
Well, but so, you could also do like a clay tablet.
I was going to say, so what you might have would be a wax tablet with a stylus.
I can help you with that.
I promise Claiborne.
You could just do it on Claiborne's back and he can remember it.
It wasn't anybody you know, Claiborne, I promise.
I'm sure that it was.
So I think I would have... you might remember, like, I traced it as it became illuminated, and then afterwards, using the tracing, I would have done it on a wax tablet, and I actually pull it out and show it to Rat.
What is that?
I was just about to ask you that. Does it look familiar to you?
No.
We found a trace of this knotwork down by the spinner cages. And I suspect that...
I examined that area and saw no such knotwork.
The trace wasn't physical.
Oh. I see. Is that a trick easy in the teaching? We Pantre are known to be clever.
I think that there are many ways to the same destination, and my way would be the hardest for one of your kind. But there is one of us who shares a connection with a being that we have since thought extinguished, that you're very familiar with. The dragon.
You do not believe the dragon to be extinguished?
All I know is what I've seen with my own eyes. I say, looking at Cecile very
pointedly. Cecile looks pretty sad. I imagine they're just mostly after echoes. Remembrances. The earth changes so slowly.
This would probably get me burned in Cahal, which is an interesting change of pace, but... I suspect that...
Oh, well, I'm all ears. Well, one anyway.
I suspect that the serpent, the dragon, and the mist are far more ancient and eternal than the gods that we have mourned. I don't think such things are I don't know. Anything is possible.
I have learned from humankind that the dragon, the serpent, and the mist are figments of the Pantry's imagination.
Oh, of course. Well, ignore everything I just said then. It wouldn't do for a faithless servant of Tuhal to go about spreading such imaginary nonsense.
One could get in a great deal of trouble saying such things.
Indeed.
Hmm.
May I tell you a story?
Please. Oh, I very much like stories. Start again.
In the place where I have stayed recently, there was a worker of metal.
A monger.
Yes. And he had a hammer to use. And he said the hammer had been in his family for 800 years.
Which was an old hammer.
Is a very long time among humans, I believe.
It is.
It is, yeah.
One day, I saw the hammer handle break. And the next day, he had made a new handle out of a strong piece of wood. And I asked him how many times have you had to fix that? And he said three times in his lifetime, and once the head had to be replaced. Do you understand?
That is an excellent story. I have no idea what you're talking about.
The hammer has been in his family for over 800 years. The head of the hammer has been replaced many times, and so has the shaft. And yet it is still the same hammer and still in the family.
No part of the hammer now is the same as the part of the hammer when it was first made.
That is what I wish you to understand. Perhaps it is the same with gods.
My people say you can never step in the same river twice.
Is more, but that's where the hammer is? Asks Terriga. With deadly accuracy, Rat beans him in the middle of the forehead with a piece of bread. It's quiet time now. Shh.
Tell me more about that, Cecile.
I suppose we see it differently. It's sort of the opposite is what you were saying. You said the hammer's the same, even though no part of it is. But for us, things change even if it's slowly. Water changes fastest. If you step in a stream, then you're stepping in that water in that moment of time as it rushes past you. If you come back, even for another step, the stream itself will be different. Its history is different. That which you knew is down the river and is unretrievable. The only constant is change. We speak of rivers as being rivers and being the same, but they're always different for everyone who visits them.
Perhaps both these stories are true.
And that is why the Pantry have left the sword alone.
Not completely. We met the pantry every so often. They are good traders.
Well, treat glass. What will you investigate now? That you have emptied our cisterns.
Oh.
And eaten all my bread.
I did not know it was the last of it.
He looks at Cecile.
No bread is the same. It smiles a little kitty smile.
Cecile laughs, and then I think you hear like Sisyphus, and he makes this sound almost sort of like this, and it's the slow sort of avalanche sort of sound. It sort of sounds like internal stones like rolling past each other, and you realize that he is also laughing.
Nice.
I kind of gesture towards the wax tablet. This work is especially unusual in Tuhal for reasons I'm sure you understand, but what is already challenging is the artistry in the physical creation of this. I don't think there are many. What would a not worker be called?
A dree.
Oh, but aren't Nazi also used for other things, or is it just for magic?
Oh, like for so it they would be a monger, somebody that right. works with their hands. Like a knot monger or a, I mean, there wouldn't be like a knot maker, you know, so like people that are metal workers would work knots into their metal, and people that are tapestry mongers, you know, or that are weaving mongers would weave knots into their tapestries and, you know, et cetera.
Do you know of any monger that might be capable of this kind of work?
Waxmonger?
I kind of tilt my head.
I mean, the alternative is you're asking me if I know someone who works secretly in soot and smoke, which, given that you're a dree, even sounds like a little bit of a crazy question.
No, I'm sorry. Not in terms of the substance of what is being worked, but in the knots themselves.
Oh.
There are many mongers who decorate their armors with knots like these.
I see. This is not the mark of an armor monger, I recognize. Is that what you mean by the question?
Yes, and also by a certain skill, I suppose, whether you could recognize that or not.
So perhaps a visit to the new market might be in order. The mongers there would all know each other's marks.
There's out of character, there's a new market. How new is it?
Since the wars. The old market was built around the builder road, and it has become a swamp. And so only poor people live there now. And the actual market, which is the new market, moved.
Right.
So the old market's actually relatively close to here. It's about halfway back to the crown. And the new market is just outside the crown, basically.
I see. A question I have is, given that Rat is basically a slave, what sort of gift makes sense if you want to show your appreciation and for also for services that you're going to ask them for. Like, you wouldn't pay them money, right? I don't even know if he can spend it. And also, that seems rude.
Slaves, so slaves can get away with a lot because, you know, in the name of their masters, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. In this culture, like praise and acknowledgement and like a sort of a promise for like, I'll carry your story.
Oh.
Have weight. Even in the absence of bards, that's a right. thing that lingers. And you with your tradecraft would have picked up that he's actually worried that Cleon Roa isn't here, because the ruin for a slave is the loss of their master. Because as you would know, it's the loss of a reliable protection. And probably somebody that puts up with their eccentricities.
Wait, so if a slave loses their master, do they, what happens to them?
Then they're basically, they can be taken by anybody.
I mean, like, if a slave were to remove their torque,
they'd be killed.
I see.
His torque is not removable. It's fixed around his neck. I mean, it could be cut off, but...
I mean, would you be
able to... But the head would go first.
Would you be able to seek a new master?
I mean, slaves were property, right? So...
Yeah.
It would be inherited like property, and if there wasn't anyone, then presumably whoever's kind of in charge would just be like, well, there's no one to claim it, and so I have the most swords, so it's mine.
That's fair.
Right, so Cleon Roa is the fightmonger, so he's probably the one, I mean, probably the Proving Grounds are owned by the Tuhal.
Mm-hmm.
But they're sort of functionally seem to be owned by the fightmonger, by Cleon Roa.
And seems like is Rat concerned about Cleon Roa for his own sake, or is he also concerned about Cleon Roa in a personal way?
That's not clear.
I ask him, can you tell me a little bit more of Cleon Roa? What sort of man is he? How would somebody who is not a servant of Cleon Roa describe Cleon Roa?
I have often heard him described as an unreasonable, unceremonious son of a bitch. Does that qualify?
It does indeed. And what is your personal feeling on when he says that? I got the impression that that is actually not him kind of passing on his own opinion.
No, it's not.
So then I ask, and what is your opinion on such descriptions?
It is not for a lowly slave to gainsay the opinions of free men. However, for this one's experience, Cleon Roa is like a bronze blade. Sharp, bright, fair, and cutting what it means to cut.
And those sounds traits like approval. Almost surprising in a fightmonger.
The Proving Grounds would not have endured without his unique oversight, as they have through these troubled times. And
he looks at Taraga, who is who has pulled up several blades of grass and is having them fight one another in his hands.
And not all those who now live would continue to survive.
He looks at Targa and looks back at you.
I nod quietly. You've already offered more than what would even be expected of a faithful servant, and I'm very grateful for that.
He narrows his eyes with feline suspicion.
Perhaps we could find this fightmonger and bring him home.
I'm reluctant to make a further request, but may I do so?
Of course.
I would like very much to have some pudding. That's my request, says Targa, joining in.
I think I took a piece of bread at his forehead.
Oh, and we have been assaulted.
But I laugh kind of good-naturedly, and I say, then from one faithful servant. And there's no actual playfulness in this. He's saying this very seriously. Then from one faithful servant to another, if Cleon Rua were to return, or if you were to receive knowledge of his fate or whereabouts, is there any way you could pass that to me back in Caer Cubal while I continue this investigation there? Could you perhaps tell him to find me or contact me if he were to actually show in person?
Of course.
Then I am grateful.
As are we.
I think he takes the last bit of bread in his hand and he kind of uses it to scoop up the last of the stew and savors it as he eats it.
Ah, nice.
I promise it is not for my, it is not made of my namesake.
I'm glad. That would not be a fate deserving. I'm sure your story, I know your story is a rare one. And I appreciate you have shared with me what you have. And I'll keep it for you.
I thank you. And I hope to hear more of your story in days to come.
Claiborne approaches Rat and hands him something. They are three fine silver earrings.
I found these in the corners. Perhaps they will be valuable to the two of you who have given such hospitality the last of your sustenance.
Silver and gold just don't go together, I'm afraid. It's hysterical. Rat looks at him like, oh God.
Kian kind of nods. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I thank you for your found generosity, Master Claiborne.
Master?
One who directs their own craft is often referred to so. He kind of side eyes at Gian.
Although the pantry is wearing just like a vest and kind of like a leather like mini kilt, the earrings vanish.
We are all servants here. And in our own way, we are all masters here also.
You may earn back that unfettered title of wise yet, wizard.
Probably posthumously.
We're often not appreciated in our own lives.
You took the words right out of my mouth. He says, bowing to somebody who beat him to it.
I wish you well on your journey. May the road rise up to meet you.
Thank you.
But hopefully not too literally. As the builder, roads have been known to do.
Terriga leaps to his feet and puts one fist on one hip and says, "Do you require an escort back into town? The night is dark and the ways are uncertain."
Not from you, you idiot.
Oh. Quite right. I'll go...
After all, we need someone to stay here and guard the proving grounds from would-be enemies.
Precisely.
If you were to leave, you would leave them vulnerable. It's a task I can entrust to no one else.
I will secure the door behind you and light the watchfires. But not too many of the watchfires, lest we run out of oil.
Actually, when he leaves, I begin rising, and I look over to Rat and waiting until Targa is out of earshot. I say, when we approached, he took on the appearance similar to that of Bell for a moment. Perhaps I'm merely hallucinating from a long journey, but have you seen anything like that before? With that one, touched as he is.
It's no accident that Glianroa keeps him and feeds him and gives him work.
I see.
I would ask you not to speak to the red blade that keeps you on this matter.
Rest assured, very little, if any, of what we have said here tonight will reach her ears. It wouldn't be good for any of our healths.
I believe it is true that he is Chantarica, as you describe it, that he is touched by something.
You called him Cherna just now.
Yes.
He introduced himself as Cherna, and that's the only time he's... I mean, Targa hasn't ever, since that initial introduction, has never referred to himself as Cherna since, right?
No.
And so I kind of like peer at Rat. He introduced him as such, but hasn't said that since, nor have we. And I kind of look at him expectantly for an answer.
This is a place of broken memory. And something about it is right for this place, and it is right for him.
I see. Well, I'm glad that you two have each other. I let this and then look over towards Cecile and Claiborne. Does it, in this time or setting, does it make sense to travel at night, or would it be more reasonable to wait till morning?
No, I mean,
I probably wouldn't go through the Tainwood during dark.
Yeah. You might not want to transit the Tainwood at night, and you might not want to, but there is a nightlife, so to speak. The public houses are open by night and people go there. And
we're pretty close to the city.
The roads aren't dangerous, for example.
In the city, I mean, there's a certain kind of danger by night. But it's a very immortal kind of danger. Mm. And there are sort of like celebration halls, Cailí Dún, that are like, they're not quite public houses, but they're kind of like dance halls, and people gather and play music and dance, and it's a sort of like it's a way that the people of Tu Hall deal with the troubles of the past.
What kind of dancing is this? Is this like river dance or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like big circles and big groups, right. And
I'm getting from that we're actually still in civilization. I was kind of concerned that like maybe we were like traveling on a road at night, and that might be, but it also sounds like if we were to encounter any danger, it would probably be worse for them than it would be for us.
Yeah. I mean, given you guys, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you really wanted to punish them, you and Cecile could try to cooperate on something. Yeah, no. It's, I mean, you know, you wouldn't want your granny to walk the streets by night, but, you know.
Can't keep her in.
Yeah, well. At the Cailí Halls, all hours, I tell you.
Well, we have, I think, 2 weeks until the wolf pup's father's birthday. So we should probably be on our way. I have some thoughts about where to start in the morning.
Alrighty. Well, so we've been at it for a couple of hours. So why don't we take like a 5-minute break and get whatever you need to get.
Okay.
Snackies and drinkies. And
okay.
Dale, I keep hallucinating that whatever light is coming in your window is like daylight.
Yeah.
Since it was darker than that during the day here, and it is now full night outside.
It's a little trippy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not daylight. Is that a light, or what is that?
It's a high-quality LED that is shining up onto disco balls that are hanging from the ceiling, and it fills the room with spatters of light. But on the curtains, it looks like sunlight coming through leaves.
Yes. That is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. All righty. So let's take like a quick, you know, 3 to 5 minute break. And
okay.
I'm going to eat something.
Yay.
Sounds good.
I'm hungry.
Oh, that's great, John. All righty. These violent delights have violent ends.
How much longer do we think we're going to?
We're scheduled till 10, so for another hour. Is that okay?
Yep, I'm good.
I mean midnight, another 3 hours.
Is that okay? I'm good, however
three
long.
In the morning.
I was just curious. Okay.
We'll just start the combat at like 1 a.m. and just...
Oh, then we're not sleeping. Well, at least if this was exalted, we might not be sleeping.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
It was a fun combat, but that one combat where the caravan was attacked, that one took a long time. What is Kitty's name?
Oh, Ipsum.
Ipsum. Nice. Does it have a friend named Dolores? Or Lorem?
I was considering getting two cats, but this one is excellent and unfortunately declawed.
Oh.
And so basically I'd have to have another declawed cat or they would completely lord it over her.
Right.
And yeah. I just don't want that going on. So
yep.
She's it.
You stump and thump and bump your way up the rough-hewn steps of the Proving Grounds and out of its circumferences into the wild green grass that surround it. Even the memory of the places where fair folk come, oh, and perhaps fair folk indeed, come to sell their wares outside the Proving Grounds, armed with cat butts.
Trying to get her to turn around. Hey, I want the other end.
As you have made your way out onto the wet, dew-gathering grass outside in the early night, the faint silhouette of Terriga remains behind you in the large doorway of the Proving Grounds, and he grasps the edges of the massive, stout wooden door with its brass rivets, and bows to you from the waist and says, in a booming voice, I shall keep this place until your return. And there is something in his words that pushes the mist back for a moment as it gathers in the evening, as though there was more than just a simple promise. And then with quiet strength, he shoves the enormous door closed, and you hear the balancing act of him incompetently fumbling with the latch inside.
I think Terriga has a mythos card.
Well spotted, sir.
Kian, you catch yourself looking back, kind of enjoying the sight. And as you turn back to your path, you catch yourself half a step from putting your foot down on the builder's road, which has shifted into a sinuous serpent's curve to encompass the front entrance of the Proving Grounds.
You said that people had come with wares?
There's a space where the grass is slender and thin, where people obviously come and set up booths and things.
Is the grass black and thick?
Yes.
And seems to move around of its own accord.
No, the grass in this particular area is kind of the ground is sort of flinty and the grass is kind of sparse and thin.
Okay.
Having been well trod upon.
I figured this could be an example.
What kind of, I'm actually, unless the other two stop me, like, I'm curious as to what wares they're selling.
No, there's no one here.
This is just
an area where when the proving grounds are open, people gather. And so
I see
a bunch of gravel and flint and schist has been dumped on the ground and remained over time. And the grass has been trodden down.
Oh, okay. And I am also probably assuming that the kind of wares you're talking about are like spectators, get your whatever here.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Get your fried chicken hearts here.
Lord.
And so, do you want to have an in-character discussion about where you're going next, or would you like to have an out-of-character decision about where you're heading tonight or for the next scene?
I generally prefer in character, but
okay,
I'm willing to do whatever.
Okay, so you freeze before your foot falls on the milky blue white imperishable stone of the Builder Road, where it has obviously shifted from where you were hours ago.
Right.
Although, it seems always to have lain here, just like this. And the ground around is undisturbed, bearing mute witness to its eternalism.
I think as my foot like hovers a few inches above the road, I draw it back and I kind of look at it pensively and say, there was a time where I would have been pleasantly surprised, even reassured, to find this here. Strange how things change. It seems that we have a few avenues for our investigation. Why? And he kind of like looks thoughtfully towards the moon.
Which one?
That's right. Was it Gromgood?
Gromgood is the blue silver moon that's hanging overhead. And Dolan is still hovering on the horizon as you look, but the bottom tip is touching the distant horizon as though she's setting.
Then it would be Gromgood.
Okay.
You know what I said earlier about all of us being servants. That's not entirely true. This is more or less a fiction. I don't claim any ownership over either of you. Why are you here? He says in a way that's not challenging, just curious.
Matthew, I don't know yet.
Sorry about that. We were led to believe that there was a human Dree who could help us understand a problem our people has been having. And we believe that to be you.
And how sure are you about that?
Me? But Sisyphus is absolutely sure. Yeah, I know. Absolutely sure. And so I'm not that interested in the workings of men and their killing fields and all that, but we've been led to believe that you have some part to play, that your fate is entwined with ours.
Well,
and with all due respect, you seem like you could use some help right now. From everything you've told us, it sounds as if you've been chosen this less because they imagine you'll succeed and more because they don't mind you failing.
There's a part of Kian that bristles at that,
mm-hmm.
in a way that has been very uncharacteristic. But he quickly regains equanimity and nods with the truth of it.
You mentioned that it was a fiction that we were all servants, but I would challenge you and say that it is no fiction. As we all stand right now, we are all servants. But perhaps together we could be something more.
I have always felt that there is honor in choosing what you serve, whatever that is. It is a fundamental paradox that I think service is the only way that a man or any mortal being becomes something greater than itself. That being said, it is no laws of Tuhal that keeps you here. Not it is not my will to enforce upon you. I wanted to be sure that that was clear to you both.
I appreciate that. But in another sense, there are... Do they have chickens, Paul? I figure that's pretty universal. A chicken in a cage might think of himself as being trapped in a cage, while in a smaller songbird, perhaps a nightingale or something, might look at the fineness of their cage, the attentions devoted on them by the master, the fact that their food is potentially even of better and more consistent than what they might find in the wild, and think to themselves that they are less of a slave than the chickens in their coop. Maybe they might even decide to themselves that they chose that life. But they are still a slave, and they're still in a cage, whether the cage is nicer or not. I serve the dragon because he's looked out for my people. And if he is gone, I serve the memory and hope that the memory will continue to inspire my people, even if the dragon can no longer protect them.
I envy you. I don't... I don't know what I serve beyond my own survival. For now. And I kind of glance over towards Claiborne.
I think there's three heads kind of all tilt towards Claiborne.
Do you often...
Hang on. As you do, you realize that a bloody shadow has gone off of things, and that small, dark Dolan, who is said to keep the doors of night, has slipped below the horizon, and Gromgood has advanced many hands across the sky. And so only blue is left to the night, as though perhaps the builder structure that is called the Ribbon is winning.
Do you often find yourself doing things for reasons you don't understand?
Me?
No, Claiborne.
Oh, Claiborne.
As you turn and look at Claiborne, he is standing near you and is completely motionless. And so you realize that there is nothing about his appearance in this moment that would differentiate him from a marble statue. There are none of the tiny movements and tells that would show you that this is a living being. And then he turns his head toward you.
I think Kian reflexively, his hand goes up as if, like, without consciously being aware of it, like he's about to touch Claiborne to see if he's actually even real. And then his head turns and he remembers himself and takes a step back.
He turns toward the wizard and says, "You are important, and I will follow you." And he turns to the other two and says, "You are important, and I will follow you. And so perhaps I am a servant to this question that must be answered."
Who is asking the question?
I don't know yet.
And so why do you answer?
It is what I am.
And
momentary intrusion. Mm-hmm. You are now part of a group, and your group has a singular available tag.
Yay.
Which is, "We are servants," which you may use to exceed the 3 tag limit on skills.
Excellent.
So, I think there are a number of things we could do. I think one thing is, if the Fightmonger is in trouble, he might not keep. If we were interested in going after him, that might be, time might be important there.
I was... he kind of nods, but he kind of shrugs his shoulders. "I was skeptical of us being able to track him down. We don't have any leads on which direction he went or who he last spoke to, other than..."
To be fair, he did not sound like the sort of man that would be subtle or hard to to miss.
And yet, he has been missing for 2 weeks.
But is that because nobody's bothered to go after him?
If we were to look for him, where would we even start?
Well, didn't the pantry say he went that way?
Sure.
He just looks at you blankly. Did Rat offer any more specifics about that or no?
No.
Yeah. Was there a sense that he knew anything more specific than that?
About
going back and asking him?
Yeah, you don't think so.
Yeah.
You had a sense that he didn't live there, but he was... Like, the Rat obviously had a sense of where some of the others lived, for whatever reason. But not so much with the Fightmonger. Because he was there all the time.
Go to where? Mm-hmm. We could go to the living places of the missing fighters, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious in, and he kind of pulls out the wax tablet. Rat made an accurate observation, which is that there is a murder to be solved. I feel if we find the person who is responsible, it will also help us find Cleon.
Agreed.
He said that he was going to find monsters.
No, he was gonna go find fighters. The others bring the monsters.
Specifically, the missing fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Who were conveniently also the ones who were most suspect of Bin's murder.
I am sorry. Perhaps I did not understand the difference between monsters and fighters.
It can be a difficult distinction.
It's rather subjective, really.
So where would one go to find set fighters?
Well, Rat did know the general locations where they lived. We could check there.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Which one, the one that seemed most suspect, at least to Rat, was Darrow. How far is that one?
Yeah, Darrow O'Boyne, right?
O'Boyne, yeah.
Darrow O'Boyne, he said, lives in the Old Market, which is along the ribbon back into town. So the Old Market was the original marketplace of Kaer Cuval. And when the builder structure that is the ribbon began to shift, the Old Market became, the ground became sodden and fetid and turned boggy and was abandoned as a market. And then people who were stubborn or had already lived there or both or poor moved in. And so it's kind of a long if you think of Kaer Cuval as a series as like perhaps an expanding knotwork from the crown, which is the center of Kaer Cuval, it's along the ribbon about halfway toward the proving grounds, and in fact the sort of eastward section of Kaer Cuval tends to be a lot of like cattle yards and stock yards and chicken yards and other things for people coming into town to kind of rent space for goods to then sell or animals to then sell in town.
Mm-hmm. How far is this?
It's a sort of generally swampy area anyway. So it's not that great for living or, you know, businesses or other things.
Mm-hmm.
It's about half a mile from here.
How far is the new market from there?
The new market is about another half mile on, and it's kind of a, it's like a, it's a, oh, what's that game? With the questions, and it's, you've got a circle, like kind of a rotunda thing that you fill with pie wedge shaped pieces.
Trivial Pursuit?
Yes. It's kind of a Trivial Pursuit piece, north and east of the Crown.
Ah.
So there's what's called the New Road, that's probably like 500 years old, running from the Crown, north from Kerkuval north toward Kerbrave. And then the ribbon runs pretty much east from there. And so in the sort of puzzle piece defined by those is the new market.
And the old road is not a builder road, right? It's just a regular road.
The ribbon is the old road.
Oh,
or there isn't an old road. It's, they probably mean by designating it the new road, yeah. They meant something newer than the ribbon, which could also be anything.
Right.
Because builder structures, you know, have been the same forever and never change.
And the other two missing fighters, where are they in relation to these things?
Donald O'Dare also lived in the old market, and Donald Olu lived in the old market, and Bandon Olu lived in an area called Clearwater, which is built around a small lake or a big pond. Kind of to the west of the new road.
Okay. Good. They're all pretty close. I say to the others, what do we think about going home and getting some rest? Well, I kind of nod apologetically towards Claiborne. At least I will probably need sleep. But first thing at dawn's light, as the merchants get ready for the day's business, we can ask around about the knotwork, and then at a time that is slightly later and perhaps less rude to intrude on a family's house, we could go visit the quarters of Cleon Rua, or those who know him, his neighbors. And then, since Donald is also nearby, we can talk to those who know him as well.
That seems a wise course of action. There will be many questions about why you have Surian following you. What would you say to them?
They're very good at carrying large loads.
Well, one of us is. We'll meet you in the morning.
I rather think Claiborne will be harder to explain, but I've done worse.
Harder to explain, perhaps. However, perhaps less threatening. Magic is mistrusted, but it's familiar. people don't look for escape spells in the same way they looked for escaped slaves.
Claiborne, what do you usually do at night since you don't sleep? And since, you know, I know you and I assume you stay nearby where I am, like, what is my experience of what you do when you go to bed? Or when I go to bed, rather?
I have never been to your bed.
No. I'm asking out of character, what is my experience of, like, when I go to sleep, do I see where you go, or do I see anything about what you do in the nights?
Say before dinner, but before the evening meal, you might see Claiborne sitting on that block of builder stone in the alley.
Right.
And then after the meal, you don't see him.
I don't know what your, he says the word with a question mark, plans are while we rest, but I do hope you'll manage to stay out of trouble.
If you are asking what I do in the evening, I listen to the song of the world.
Is it different?
Is it different to what?
Is the song of the world only present at night?
It is easier to hear when the world is quieter. The world of humans and Thurin and Tantri and Foot.
I wonder if it's a song that can be taught.
I hope so.
Making their way through the darkness of the new day, they pass into their own habitats and seek rest and respite as they might, even as the citizens of Kaer Kuval take the streets in revel and merriment, and the thud of distant drums and the whine of instruments and voices make their way like pale metal threads into the dark of their dreams or ruminations, it being difficult to tell the two apart. And all such movements of soul and body are gone by morning. And as Grian presumably rises somewhere in the distance, it seems that the mist has once again taken Kaer Kuval into its embrace, as the streets are thick with mist of the morning. And everything is, although it hasn't rained, everything is wet through and through, and even the small Sorin knows to wear wool to keep the substance of the body of the mist from his flesh. For anyone that goes out on such a morning, clothed in anything but wool will be soaked and shaking to the bone before they walk 100 steps. And so on such a morning, hang on just one sec. Sorry, I'm doing a poetry gathering tomorrow, and one of my friends who's coming, her dad just had to go to the hospital.
Oh, no.
Which is worrying in and of itself, not coronavirus related, but
right.
That's also a concern. Sorry. So it's on just such a morning that arriving the three wool wearers shining in their in the drops of the tiny raiments of their wool clothing, even great Sisyphus having a sort of a wool blanket, probably a large wool blanket fastened around his shoulders like a shawl, and the younger Surin wearing a proper sweater and woolen pants to ward off the chill. Claiborne moving more slowly and soggily than you were used to seeing him, as he is unable to shed the great wetness of the air that's pressing itself into him. And so he's a little foggier than usual.
Mm-hmm.
You make your way easily on the certainly very well ground shale covered new road near to the crown, and then the less certainly well shaled new road as it moves away from the crown across the new market. gathering together, you move between the stalls, taking your wax tablet that is immune to wet, and hold the rough sketch of dot work that you've drawn among the mongers of the market. And your questions among the metal workers draw blank stares as they don't seem to know any bronze mongers or brass mongers that use such a sign. And so you continue your investigation. And so I'm going to go ahead and have you actually do an investigation roll for me if you want to.
Yeah.
Find out.
Is this a thing that more than one of us can, like, can we help each other?
Sure.
Uh-oh. Maybe not. I will leave that at your discretion, fellow servants. I am going to use likable.
Mm-hmm.
Espionage. This is actually a you know, kind of the information gathering that would be, I think, very similar. And perceptive.
Paul?
Mm-hmm.
I think Claiborne might see that he is asking people about this shape incised into the surface of the wax, and would grab one of the children and say,
Nope, it's not say, in him. It's not in her either. Sorry.
I need your face.
Oh, God.
Sorry. We're with you. Yes, you grab one of the children.
That went to 1 to 100, like, instantly.
grab one of the street children and ask them to look at this and tell me if they have seen anything like it. So perhaps that can be helpful.
That sounds like a separate investigation.
Mm-hmm. I'm just adding a resource that you wouldn't normally have.
Totally. Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
I don't think the children recognize the design, but you could certainly soil their flesh and send them out into the market asking questions about it.
If I drew part of the design on their skin with my finger?
Yeah, I mean, you could probably just, like, grab their arm and take your hand away and have the knot work be there.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
It's like henna.
Yes.
And they'll be delighted with it and show it off.
Yeah.
I do just want to offer that this symbol was found at the site of a possible grisly murder / spinner escaping and...
Oh, yeah. That's even better, Governor.
And we're putting this symbol
on me.
Children.
Do a murder on me.
Do a murder. I'm going to.
These are street children. They're a different breed.
That's fair. I am going to feign ignorance about this. And
I done a murder. It didn't look nothing like that.
Oh, and Paul, you said we can use We Are Servants now that we have that group tag, right?
Yeah, if it's appropriate.
I think it's appropriate here.
Uh-huh. And how does it pertain?
Well, first of all, because it's part of this investigation, and I'm here on a particular mission as a servant, but also I want to see who this knot serves.
So I would say you have to say who you're serving. You would have to, you could tap that if you're letting it be known that Adrian Cubal wants this to happen.
Yes.
Okay, and you realize there may be consequences?
I mean, is that not a factual statement?
It is.
Right.
And if he had wanted to know, he would have met you in the new market.
If he had wanted me to know? I'm sorry.
He had some dudes who didn't mention his name come get you and bring you into a place where nobody can go to meet him.
Oh,
and
I
then
see
inside
what you
mean. A building where nobody can go and a place that nobody can go.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get to this has been willed where what is willed must be.
I suppose you won't you wouldn't let me get away with saying that this is an interest of the crown.
No.
How pissed
John,
do I
perhaps,
want Adrian
perhaps
to be
a different ever? Angle here.
Yeah.
We are servants. And so we have avenues of investigation that the upper classes do not have. And we're putting those avenues to use.
What do you think, Paul?
Sure.
I could also ask some of our friends who are among the slaves. Who nobody pays attention to and see things that, you know,
right?
Because who cares if they see it? Mm-hmm. Believe them anyway.
Queso, you're going to tap, "We are servants looking in places that the rich and the wise wouldn't mm-hmm. be welcome."
Yeah, some other servants, people who usually pass unnoticed.
Okay.
Well, and we've already got that with the children wearing the knotwork going out into the market. Does that work? Should I go ahead and roll?
Yeah. Roll.
2d6 plus 4?
Yeah.
Oh, wrong channel. There we go. 2d6 plus 4. Let's not fuck this up. Doop. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Almost dynamite.
15. All right.
I show it to somebody and notice that he has it literally tattooed on his forehead.
So you impress the children, you ask the mongers, they don't seem to know anything. You ask the weavers, they don't seem to know anything. Although there's a little bit of like, show us that not again.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe we want to put that on something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think one of the as you break and are having a you have paused because there's a the slate roofed building that the brass mongers work in the dew, there's drip, drip, drip from all the corners. And with his eyes closed and his head tilted like a dog being scratched in just such a place, Claiborne has stopped with the drip running down the back of his neck, disappearing more quickly than it should. And one of the children, now with a knotwork on her arm, that looks much nicer and more complete than the wax sigil that you have on your slate.
There.
She runs up and she says, "Do you know me?"
"I know your face."
And she turns the paper bag that she has on her head so that the face is on the side and says, "Do you know my face now?"
"I know your face."
"Oh, come on." We didn't find a person, but we found a place and maybe a person, and we talked," and you see a gaggle of the boys like over across the market, like huddled underneath the apple cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're kind of like these pale faces in shadow with bright points for eyes, all peeking out like rats from mm-hmm. underneath the benches that hold the baskets full of apples, also harvested from the Danewood. And we decided that maybe you
might want to look for something other than this. And also, we can't wash it off, so if you could take it back.
I will take put my hand over her arm, and when I take it away, there's a pattern of a beautiful flower in mud.
She does a little dance, complete with like river dance footwork in place.
Cool.
All right, well, that's settled then. So, good luck. And she turns to go away.
Can you show me the place?
Well, she looks over and one of the boys is making like run away motions with hands visible from underneath the apple seller's benches. Well, I could, but we decided that you shouldn't go. So you should not hang around with the wizard, and maybe you should go back to the block and everything will be better.
And then if you tell me, I will take off my hand for you.
Oh, and she looks back and there's like a no, no, no from several hands, but there's a yes, yes, yes from several other hands. Well, all right, how about if I just whisper it to you and then you take off your hat? And she sort of like makes like a with one finger and like reaches out to tap your hand. Oh, it's so cold. How about that?
That will do very well.
All right. She whispers in your ear. She whispers in Claiborne's ear, and he looks at her and then holds out his arm and looks stricken as the right hand goes sort of pale and colorless, and then just kind of like separates at the wrist bone and falls to the earth with a splat right next to her foot. And she goes, ah! And runs away. And you see all the kids are running, but they're sort of running to kind of reconnoiter with her as they make their way through the market. And what she told you, what she whispered in your ear is that she saw the design under a strange water wheel in Loch Carum. And Loch Carum is, so there's the crown, and then there's like an earthenwork, so there's the hill in the middle of everything. And mm-hmm. then there's sort of an earthenwork, like an old fort, earthenwork wall, that's mm-hmm. been kind of enhanced over the centuries. Mm-hmm. And inside that wall, there's one section of it. There are weird kind of curving paths and stuff. And one section of it, between two of the curving paths, there's an enormous pond or lake called Loch Carum.
Okay.
It has some sculptures and some other weird things in it.
And she said it's below the water wheel in Loch Carum?
Yeah.
Hmm.
although Lot Karim isn't a river and wouldn't have, you don't think, have a water wheel, but.
Right.
But the children also aren't prone to making up that kind of thing.
Right. There's enough of the world for them. They don't need to make up more of it. There is a wet place that is named Loch Karim. We must go there. I do not know this place. What do you suggest?
And I think maybe we agree to reconvene near.
Yeah, the... you're back together. He's telling you.
Right, and I'm narrating. I'm narrating.
Oh, sorry.
Think, no problem. I think we agreed to reconvene near the new road. And Kian looks appropriately haggard from a couple hours of futile searching. Does the Loch Karim, is that familiar to me?
Lake? Yeah. Yeah.
Have I heard of there being a water wheel or anything like that?
There isn't. There's a bunch of like weird statues and stuff in and around Loch Karim. There could be like a simulation of a water wheel. You haven't particularly paid attention.
Oh. And he kind of raises an eyebrow and thinks for a moment, that's an odd place. But the strangeness of that information makes it all the more interesting. That's very helpful. How did you convince the children to be of assistance?
I told them I would take off my hand for them.
Oh, and did you?
Yes.
Have I seen this before?
No.
Wow, I'm a little envious. He says a little boyishly.
But you've seen people do the finger magic trick of taking
off their thumb. Mm-hmm. Right.
You assume it's something like that.
But real.
Why would you assume that? Got your nose. Got your face.
I need your face. All right. Screen swipe. The late morning clouds have thinned, and so while Grian's face is not shining directly down upon you, there's a clear white light illuminating everything in a scattered way that robs almost everything of its shadows and makes water both dark and pointlessly gleaming at the same time. And so the waters of Loch Karim, which is like a long, dark, slender leaf stretched between the crown and the wall. And there are in fact many stones and sculptures and standings in its waters and along its banks. Some of them, Kian, you obviously recognize as like Dree teaching stones of old.
Oh, wow. Still around.
Yeah.
Are there fish in it? Or is it more just like a reflection kind of thing?
There are fish in Loch Karim. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a bunch of like small kind of fast silver fish. And you see it's warm enough at this time of year that there are some frog spawn in the waters that swarm together like dark little beads with intent. And then in the deeper waters, you see occasionally a large mouth kind of clear the surface and disturb water birds that are floating with excessive serenity.
What is a Dree teaching stone?
Dree teaching stones are often marked with sigils and like drawings, and they're often aligned with other nearby stones so that their shadows cast, particularly at sunrise and sunset at important times of year, their shadows cast interesting shadows on the other stones.
Is it surprising to me that they've just been left out in such a place little, where
Although this is a place where the public isn't particularly allowed, so maybe that explains it.
Wait, why is the public not allowed?
The public isn't generally allowed inside the berm, inside the outer wall.
Oh, but
unless they have a purpose at the crown.
I didn't have any. We didn't have any problems getting in, though.
No. And so eventually, you find yourself standing at a clever sculpture that moves with the wind, that springs up out of the water. And there's a slender bronze pole that has obviously been affixed into a hole in a round kind of millstone sunk in the water. And that central stone, that central rod has a brass rod through it, and then there are two brass constructs that come off either side of the rod, and they form what look like sinewy vines surmounted by leaves that might be caught by the wind. And for some reason, it doesn't want me to share that window with you, which I'm a little confused about. Okay, well, anyway.
I really want to see that one.
I know, right?
Do you want to upload it to Slack? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sure. Yes. Drag it here, and then drag it into Slack.
Oh boy, I think there's a fight going on outside.
Oh dear. And it's cool. Turning lazily and to no purpose in the breeze. And
it's a lot of bronze. It's pretty cool that nobody's melted that down.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of pointless things here in Lok Karum. Karum means like lost or pointless. Which may be why the druid stones, why the learning stones still stand.
I see.
but the whole device is, without creak or complaint, slowly turning in the breeze like a water wheel. But turning and turned only by the air. And looking down, you discover what the children were talking about, which is there's a large round millstone that the rod is centered in, and the millstone is marked with a knot pattern inescapably similar to the one you've traced.
Millstone is marked. How is it marked?
With it's marked with the, it's inlaid with the knot pattern that you trace from the hallway.
Like marked as in like chiseled or?
Mm-hmm.
I see. Huh. Is there any, actually, I'm not the one to ask this. I look over at Claiborne and I kind of side eye the knot work. Can you tell how old this carving is? And I kind of run my finger gingerly across the carving itself, like into the groove.
So it's in the lake.
Oh, but we can still see it.
Yeah.
It must be very large.
Then. It's a millstone. It's big.
But like the carving is as big as the millstone?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Then I double look at
intensify my gaze.
I don't know.
We go look at it?
I mean, I'm already, I think I...
Up close?
You're standing on the bank.
Okay. How hard would it be to get to it?
No problem.
I walk into the water.
The water's cold, but it's not acid or any flowing or...
You don't need to, like, swim to get to it, no. Right? Yeah.
No.
I will.
The millstone's only under like 3 inches of water. And so the water around the millstone is just a few feet deep. So it'd be like thigh deep.
Mm-hmm. I will wander out and put a hand on it.
Okay. Sisyphus goes over and it, you know, comes up to his ankle. Covers his feet.
And so what are you doing, Claiborne?
I'm going to attempt to answer the question posed.
Okay.
But I suspect all that I can do is tell him how old the stone itself is, which is probably millions of years.
I might be able to tell. In terms of history, I could probably tell when it happened. Not necessarily more than that. Can I try that?
Are you going to do an investigation? Or?
Yeah. Can I do a divination? The Earth Speaks?
Sure. Okay, so Earth Speaks. Anything else?
I don't think anything else really qualifies.
Okay.
So that would be 9.
Nice. Adequate.
Adequate. Serviceable.
That was our Numenera party's rallying cry.
Mm-hmm.
Adequate.
Too bad I didn't have another tag. That would have been...
So, since you got a 9 and you only have a power of 1,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you an answer to a question you didn't ask.
Okay.
And the answer is that the leaf furrow that Locarum occupies was crafted with ancient magic in accordance with the will of the dragon.
Oh.
And so, do you say anything, or?
Nope. So you're saying, okay. So again, the crown, the great building, right, of Kirkcaval?
No. So the kind of leaf shaped lake that runs from the crown to the outer bulwark wall.
Uh huh.
Which is made of earth.
Right.
And maybe clad with stones. But the leaf lake was actually crafted by ancient magic in accordance with the will of the dragon.
That he'll share, yeah. With the others.
Huh.
I think Sisyphus like moves forward. You hear, no, and he starts to pick it up. He's like, put it back down. And he's like, he just sort of sets it back down in the mud. Crap. Nope, leave it there.
Claiborne reaches down to the earth. The bottom of the lake under the stone is resting on.
Mm-hmm.
And tries to read that. Is it still adjusting to the fact of this millstone upon it?
Okay. What tags are you tapping?
That's an excellent question. What do these tags even mean?
Gosh, if only somebody wrote them down knew that.
Yes.
Sounded like rat for a second there. I'm going to use restroom. We're back.
Okay.
Geology.
Okay. Anything else? So not magic, you're just kind of being aware of the sediment of the earth.
Under my logos titled Something Is Wrong, I think maybe I know it when I see it. Might come into play here.
Nice. All right. I like it.
Come on. Oh shit, I wanted that. God damn it. Okay.
What did I miss?
rolling under general? Yes. Okay.
Sure.
Nine.
That's what I had.
Okay, and you have a power of two. So you have two questions.
Two questions.
Mm-hmm. And given that it's a nine, I'm going to say that your investigation is going to expose you to danger.
Wait. It was a nine before adding plus two, so it should be 11. No?
It was a seven plus two.
Oh, I see. Doom!
So let me give you a choice. Would you like to be exposed to danger?
That's not a choice yet.
Or for someone or something related to this place to become aware of your nosing around.
That sounds like danger.
So danger or danger? Unspecified danger or more specified danger?
I think unspecified danger.
Okay.
I'm curious to see what you're going to pull.
Which is which?
I choose danger. Rather than difficult politics.
How long has this been here? And why is it here?
It has been here since Terner laid it in the water. And the reason it is here is because it is the capstone of terror and could not remain under the earth, lest terror escape.
Wow.
And speaking of terror, as you are the earth freed from somnolence, freed from sleep, freed from dependence. So the mud around the capstone of terror learns from you, and it too, from its long sleep, is freed from independence. From dependence, from waiting, and from sleep. And the muddy water is royal, and twin eel heads resolving themselves skeletally out of mud with barely contained rows of teeth rise up on either side of Turner's capstone regarding the three of you as lunch.
So, do we roll for initiative in this?
And we're going to stop here and pick that up next time.
Yay, we're doomed.
Yay, we're doomed.
It's not a fucking millstone at all. It's the capstone of terror.
Yay.
God,
Paul. What was this is important. I want to make sure I get this right. What were the questions? The first question was how long has this been laid here? Right? And the second question was what?
Why was it laid here?
And the first answer was it was laid here by Turner.
It's been here since it was laid here by Turner. Laid in the water by Turner. And then the answer to the second question is he laid it here because it is the capstone of terror and could not remain where it was under the earth, lest terror escape.
Terror escape. Lovely.
Alrighty. So, thank you very much for this evening, gentlemen. Since it's closing time and we didn't do it at the beginning, if you would please introduce yourselves and your characters. I'm sure we know who you are by now, but have at. I'm Paul Stafford. I'm the storyteller of Marriage of Serpents.
I'm Matthew Melville. I am one of the players, and I play the two characters of Cecile and Sisyphus.
And they are?
They are the Surian explorers out in this hostile world of men.
I'm John Schiavone, and I'm playing Kian Gallagher, a Dree wizard who has been bonded into servitude in Tuhal for crimes of espionage.
I'm Dale, and I am playing Clayborne, a sort of gingerbread man of mud.
Very nice. All right, and so we'll geek out during the credits, as we do here in the storytelling in the City of Mist system. What were moments for you of your fellow players role-playing or their ingenuity that impressed you?
There were a lot.
I liked Clayborne and doing the like hand on the children and then them coming back and being like, you know, it's not coming off. Can you fix that for us? And just that whole interaction was a lot of fun. So I enjoyed that particularly.
I also loved the way way Clayborne kind of convinced the little girl to help by offering to take off his hand. That mm-hmm. was such a perfect read on that situation, and so mm-hmm. very in character. It was a beautiful moment. I love that.
I've been really enjoying the little moments when both of you have been about to answer, about to take action, and then you stop and think and go into your character and do what they would do. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching both of you walk into those characters and flower within them.
Thank you.
Also, Paul, one of the reasons I made the resource, the contact for Clayborne, be the street children is because this is a game with Paul in it, and Paul is so fucking good at street children.
He really is.
Oh, Paul is really wanted to make really sure that there were going to be street children, and so I put them in.
Oh. They salute you.
I Matthew, I really loved your moment of when you were talking, you were sharing the story. Well, actually, both of you, when Claiborne shared the story of the hammer. Mm-hmm. Or was it an axe? It was a hammer, right?
It was a hammer.
Yeah. I felt like that was very Claiborne-esque and a beautiful offering of roleplay. And I loved, Matthew, your kind of rejoinder with the proper...
the river.
That was cool. It was very, yeah.
So I got to say, I actually had a total flashback to being in Japan because I went to like a shrine dedication. Mm-hmm. And it was really gorgeous. And they were like, oh, yes, this shrine has been here for like 1,100 years. It was at this hot springs. And I was like, and I'm looking at like the newly built, obviously newly built wooden shrine. And then an old wooden shrine. And being like, you know, I was in my early 20s and I was like, is there a translation failure going on here? I was like, so this shrine that you just built is 1,100 years old. Yes. And that old shrine that you're about to light on fire is this shrine and is 1,100 years old. Yes. I think we have a different meaning of identity, but let's move on and light things on fire. Alrighty, so does anybody have any sense of help or hurt points to or from their character?
Oh, I think I just gave both of them a big old hurt point.
Oh, you think toward you?
I just stirred some shit up.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt.
Yeah. That makes sense. So if both of you would like your point to be a hurt point or Claiborne, you're welcome to take it.
No, actually, I think I will take a help point towards Claiborne.
Oh, okay. And why is that?
I like that we had that conversation before we went back where I was like, do you know what drives you? And Claiborne said that he didn't know. And I think Kian, his sense of curiosity kind of compels him to like see Claiborne to the end of Claiborne's story to find out what is driving Claiborne.
And maybe in that moment too, it sort of resonated with Kian's like, why haven't I left yet?
Yeah.
I probably could get away with it. I mean, I could never come back, but.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, there was a moment when Matthew, when you were talking, when Cecile was talking about the songbird in the cage, and he didn't say it, but Kian, I think, was thinking that like, well, there's always the choice. You could die. Mm-hmm. Like there is always a way out. And that's why I think he was kind of ashamed. He was like, well, all I've really served is survival so far. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think for that reason, I'd love to get a help point for Kian, because I feel like Sisyphus and Cecile probably particularly have seen in him something, and they are pushing for him to kind of get out of his comfort zone and sort of realize... Well, you know what? I'm going to leave it to you, Paul. We are pushing him to his natural place. Is that a help point or a hurt point? Is that we're pushing him to his natural destiny?
Yeah. Yes, it's one of those.
Right. So I'm going to take a help point, unless you would like it to be the other one. Because I can really see you. It could go either way.
Yeah. No, if you want to help, that's fine.
We didn't
Dale, do you have any sense for yourself of a help or hurt point toward anybody?
Yes. Claiborne does not know why he is doing this yet. But and when we were at the arena, he knows that these three are important and that he must follow them. He did not know why
this investigation of a murder of and disappearances has anything to do with the larger questions that are built into what he is. But in this moment of discovering this millstone and seeing what it is, they have led him directly to a clue that is on his path.
So typically you only get one point per session. So can you pick one of them?
No.
Okay. So go ahead and take one for each, and then we just won't give you one next time. Is that okay?
Actually, you know what? Do it for Sisyphus.
Okay.
Because he tried to lift it up.
Yeah.
I like that. Hey, do we get to keep our... none of us used our points. We get to keep...
Yeah, them. No, they accumulate.
Cool.
Yeah, they're not status tags. So
sweet.
Cool. They hang around. Alrighty, well, this closes episode 3, represented by the child. And episode 4, represented by the clay eels that would love to eat your face. will be our next session. So thank you for joining us for Arkov's Marriage of Serpents.
All right.